Doing the Impossible. Setting: in the barren waste of central Wyoming are three men. Two are dressed as day laborers with large western-style hats, while one, the chief surveyor, wears a vest and gentleman's hat. The surveyor has an outstretched hand pointing into the distance. One laborer carries a long-marked surveyor pole, intently looking and listening to instructions from the chief surveyor. The remaining man carries a length of knotted rope and used for distance measuring and wipes his brow with a handkerchief due to the heat. He looks in the direction of the surveyor's outstretched arm. A hot, dry, late August wind sweeps across the empty waste that lay before the group of three men. Blowing tumbleweeds wedge around their legs, and sand finds its way into their ears and eyes. Handkerchiefs tied around their faces protect their mouths. With horses and mules along, someone might mistake them for desperados, gold miners, or horse thieves. But they are not rough men who live at others' expense. These three are a surveying team with the Union Pacific Railroad. 1,500 miles lay behind them, and another 1,500 lay before them, devoid of maps, water, and any known haven of civilization. Thomas Hubbard, surveyor for the Union Pacific Railroad Company, has measured rod by rod, chain by chain, along the great Nebraska flats, around innumerous sand hills, over deep gorges and gulches, and across the great Rocky Mountain chain to this miserable wasteland on a seemingly impossible task. His task is to survey the route for the Grand Transcontinental Railway to link the civilized world in the east with the wilds of California. For nearly 2 years he has labored. For nearly 2 years he has suffered, sometimes threatening, sometimes urging, oftentimes begging his crew to continue. For Thomas believes the impossible can and will be accomplished. It is a source of pride for him. The great railway started nearly 5 years before as a dream of ambitious men who struggled with a divided nation, a nation tearing itself apart. The diversion of a Pacific railway was to wait until the war had been won, but when the guns fell silent at Appomattox, the wheels of progress began westward on the great task. 2 years later, after delays, breakdowns, and scandals reaching the top officials of the government, the road had yet to reach the halfway mark. Railway President Thomas Doc Durant and his Credit Mobiler Construction Company were up to their armpits in bribes, kickbacks, and scandals, reaching even into the pockets of the Vice President Schuyler Colfax and Congressman Oakes Ames, among others. Thomas, though, has left the politicking thousands of miles behind. Grenville Dodge, the Union Pacific's chief engineer, had chosen him as the tip of the sword. He and his crew focus on surveying and marking the route that the graders will follow across this Wyoming wilderness. Each survey stake marks the exact spot where the back-breaking, shovel-wielding graders will smooth as the right-of-way for the iron rails to lie upon. Thomas knows that he must keep moving and surveying, for behind the graders comes a city on the move, a seemingly hell on wheels made up of Irish gang labor, recently freed Negroes, and rough and leathery-skinned ex-soldiers, all cussing, grumbling, and laboring under the nearly demonic rule of the feared Casemate brothers, a pair that no just God would have created without the aid of Satan himself. Stocky Jack and Brother Dan Casemate are fearless of man or beast. They only know progress. Fill that ravine, blast that cut, smooth that level, lay that tie, place that rail, hammer that spike, pack that ballast. Then it's another 25 feet, the same, over and over again, across this wide wilderness, full of beasts and uncivilized savages. Following Chief Pawnee Killer's attack on Plum Creek Station on August 7th, where savages overpowered the small outpost, killing over half a dozen workmen and burning their bodies, the brothers exacted swift retribution. The Indians' vain effort to stop the railroad's progress then and now prove impossible. Thomas points to the far ridge and a prominent boulder where he determines to take his last measure for the day. They must finish their line and secure the camp well before sundown, where he will find water in this barren land Thomas knows not. Only yesterday his men searched the dry creek beds for nearly 10 miles off the route, only to find water, red as blood, seething with vermin, and even their tired and weary horses and mules refused. He warns his workers that time is short as daylight will soon disappear, and a moonless night will hide all man's work. Then these vast lands teem with snakes, wolves, and beasts, wild and which swither and roam freely. Although their existence is threatened by the works of man, now they reign over the vast prairie land, the ceaseless deserts, and the endless badlands, exacting their toll on unsuspecting aliens. Their days are numbered, though. Progress lurks a few brief days behind. For our team, each day seems the same. Sometimes they playfully banter about luxuries left behind, a warm bath, a feather bed, a home-cooked meal of delicious beef, fresh peas, and juicy fruits, rather than the continuous fare of salt pork, stale hardtack, and the ever-present beans, beans, and more beans. At other times, when the dullness of the landscape and tedium of the job wears on them, they snap at each other, not meaning to, but unable to prevent it. Day after day of searing heat, day after day of walking, measuring, writing notes, pounding stakes, marking the untouched landscape with the scars of man. Sometimes they are caught in an unadvertised downpour. Several times during the cold month, an unannounced blizzard forced them to seek any shelter available, even among the crags of a nearby cliff, for 3 days, until the snowstorm subsided. The thought that nature itself was against this endeavor has crossed their mind. They look like insignificant dots from any angle. Considering the length of time they have been on the job, the men question the snail's pace, which nature has forced upon them. But they continue with their impossible task. Out of individual grit and inner fortitude, the material of a nation and powerful people. After another long day on the weary plains, Thomas's crew will sleep soundly tonight, making ready to survey the next 5 miles on the morrow. And someday, soon thereafter, Thomas is confident that he and his men will triumph over the impossible, completing the great transcontinental railroad across the great American desert. Doing the Impossible: Historical Notes and Teaching Tips. Inspired by Stephen E. Ambrose's Nothing Like It in the World, Touchstone Books, New York, 2000. Doing the Impossible describes the landscapes of the Far West, specifically outlining the often overlooked job of surveyors in the grand task. Thomas Hubbard's account, August 1867, of the desert conditions of Wyoming gives a stark contrast to of most accounts of laying the iron rails that are often seen in the glorious building of the Transcontinental Railroad. Surveying allowed some sense of exploration and examination of a great wilderness that was slowly being shaped by mankind. I have traveled the route, though by automobile, and along interstate highways, between Rawlings and Fort Bridger in Wyoming, and was amazed by the starkness of the plateaus, badlands, and far-reaching deserts, seemingly devoid of life, that stretch for scores of miles even to this day. How much immaculately grander the sight must have met Thomas Hubbard's eyes as he took the grand vista into his mind as he stood upon the hillocks and precipices those many years before. Key terms. Thomas Durant, organizer of the Union Pacific Railroad Company, who often manipulated people, including congressmen, to his personal and corporate benefit of his Credit Mobiler Construction Company. Grenville Dodge, the chief engineer and builder of the majority of the Union Pacific Railroad, an able administrator and former Civil War general, this man deserves a large amount of credit in the successful completion of the project. Casemate Brothers, Jack and Dan Casemates, were hired as construction foremen because of their notoriety of hard work, driving men to achieve goals, and fame as ruthless taskmasters. Chief Pawnee Killer, a Cheyenne warrior who resisted the spread of the settlements into his tribal lands. His attack on Plum Creek Station occurred August 7th, 1867. Hell on Wheels. These were the construction towns that followed the end of track, often on railroad cars, often built using canvas tents alongside temporary camps. These places often were rowdy and dangerous, filled with saloons, houses of ill repute, and rampant gambling, especially following paydays when the workers were looking for a way to spend their earned wages. Pacific Railway Act provided land grants and low-cost government bonds to railroads in order to raise capital for railroad construction. Union Pacific officials badly abused the spirit of the law while building its portion of the Transcontinental Railroad. Construction crews. The Central Pacific Railroad was primarily built with Chinese labor, while the Union Pacific Railroad labor force were more diverse, including many Irish immigrants, freed African Americans, and ex-soldiers from both Union and Confederate armies. Password 14.